Hello and welcome everyone to another market commentary from StashAway. With us today, our deputy CIO, Stephanie. Stephanie, how has it been going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. For everyone, before we actually started the recording, Stephanie said she's able to go back to the gym and things like that. So, you know, I know she'll be in a very good mood today. So that will be good. And so things are improving everywhere in the world, hopefully with COVID. But we want to focus on a few questions that we got today from our audience, Stephanie. And something we've been talking about, obviously, for quite a few weeks now, and still the topic of inflation always comes up, right? Because I think there were, you know, it was a new record in the US again a couple of weeks ago. I think, you know, that feeling in Europe is not getting any better because, you know, I think for the first time, my dad was actually mentioning in Germany, huge price rises were happening in the grocery stores for the first time in years last week. I think like 15, 20%, that's pretty big. So the first question that we got from our audience from last time is, if inflation is due to supply chain issues exacerbated by the invasion, how will hiking interest rates fix these issues? Because we talked a lot about also what the Fed is doing and what if you raise interest rates, why does that go against rising inflation? How does that keep it in check? Maybe you can explain that a little bit with a little bit more background for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because I guess the inflation that we're seeing, a lot of that is driven by rises in commodity and oil prices. And if you think about like what's driving that, a lot of that has to do with, of course, in the short term, what's going on in Ukraine and the Russian invasion. And concerns around like supply chains, et cetera. So that's what we call like the supply pull inflation. So like, the question is absolutely correct. If it's a supply pull inflation, just rising interest rate alone would not solve the problem. The problem is that you have to increase crop production, you have to increase oil production, you have to resolve supply chain issues. However, if you look at inflation also beyond a supply chain, there's also some demand pull inflation. I mean, to be, if you look at the numbers, for example, US economy is very, very strong. And given that the Fed has actually pumped a lot of liquidity into the system since COVID, US consumers are very cash rich and they were able to buy a lot of goods. And these are like big items. Like for example, we've seen in the past year, car sales going higher, car prices going higher, home prices going higher. So these are what we call the demand pull inflation. So the Fed rising interest rates would at some point kind of temper this demand pull inflation and bring the overall inflation number down. So the Fed is trying to address part of the question, but the other part of the equation.
Let me ask you, because I think a couple of the listeners will probably ask that question as a follow-up then after you just said this. So if the Federal Reserve then raises interest rates, why does it make the consumer want to purchase less? Hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I mean, basically, what the Fed, by raising interest rates, raises the price of money. So for example, if you're borrowing to buy a house, it's more expensive to fund that, like to finance that house purchase. Same for car buying. So then it makes it like a lot more difficult for people to spend money, and that kind of like suppresses demand in that sort of way. So it's a very, very direct way for the Fed to temper demand. Now, having said that, I mean, like Philip, you're right to mention that inflation, US CPI reached 8.5% in the last print. That was a March print. And I think it was, if you read the headlines, it was the highest number, inflation number ever printed since 1981. So like 30 years or 40 years ago. And interestingly, yeah, the market actually didn't react that badly to it. So, I mean, bonds actually gained. So yields actually came down after the number was announced. So you need to look like one layer deeper. And if you look at the core inflation, so the headline inflation includes very volatile components like energy and food. But the core inflation number actually strips out these. And the Fed actually focuses on the core inflation number because core inflation is what is more sticky, more long-term. And this is what the Fed can really target. This is why I was referring to as the demand side inflation. So in March, actually core inflation number came in below expectation. And I guess there are some signs that points to a peaking out of the inflation number going forward. So that's why, I mean, the bond market is actually quite welcoming that CPI print. If we look at, for example, this chart, so we can take a look at what is going on kind of on a subcomponent basis. So as you can see, the pink line is actually the headline inflation. The yellow line is the core inflation. And this is a Bloomberg estimate. And if you look at some of the other sell side estimate, they point to, again, a peaking out of the headline inflation number right around March and April. However, even though we're seeing a peaking out in the short term kind of numbers, it's quite likely that we're going to end the year at a still fairly high inflation number. So roughly kind of like 5-6% for headline and maybe 3-4% for core. And this is what the Fed has been projected, has been baking in their projection as well. So we're going to continue to see, interest rate hikes from the Fed. But also there could be some kind of reprieve from the short-term interest rate markets, given that a lot of that rate hike has been priced.
Thank you so much for explaining this, this, Stephanie. And I think the example you gave also with, you know, rising mortgage rates, right, or car loan prices, I think we're already seeing this. I was talking to some friends here in the U.S. as well as in Germany as well, who are in the mortgage market. And, you know, mortgages went from last year, I think I refinanced at 2.75% for a 30-year mortgage. They're close to over 5.5% now. So the purchasing power directly impacts that, right? So people will not be able to afford the same amount of house than they have before. So I think that really put it in perspective. So let's move on then. And we got a second question as well that's been raised quite a few times. And the person is asking about the performance of our lower risk, especially like our SRI 6.5 portfolio, so the lowest risk portfolios. He has noticed that sometimes it lost during the, you know, based depending on, you know, kind of when you look and what your time horizon is, but within a 1 year period, it's been down more than 6.5%. So maybe we can actually talk about what SRI is again, and then why can it breach it and why not, and maybe the surroundings about that.
Yeah, so SRI stands for Statutory Risk Index. And I mean, for those listeners who have been with us for a number of years, you may be quite familiar with it. Basically, it's our measure of risk for our clients. So we basically build portfolios around like what is the risk tolerance of each individual client. So for example, the SRI is mathematically a 99% VAR of a particular portfolio. Meaning that VAR actually refers to value at risk. So basically what we've done is that for each portfolio, we've calculated the probability over a 12-month base time frame of a drawdown, maximum drawdown, i.e. from peak to trough, the maximum percentage given a 99% probability. So for example, I'll give you an example to make it easier to understand. So for example, for somebody who has kind of moderate risk tolerance, he or she may choose like 20% SRI. And the portfolio is managed such that under different economic situations, there's only a 1% chance that the maximum drawdown would exceed 20%. So this is a mathematical calculation. And of course, we've done a lot of backtesting and also real life. Since we've started portfolios, the chance of breaching that SRI has been very, very, very low. And I guess what we've seen in the past few months is a very, very significant decline in bond prices, given the interest rate environment and inflation environment that I talked about. So just to give everybody a bit of a context, if you look at this chart, this actually shows you the Bloomberg Global Aggregate Index. So aggregate index refers to the bonds. Basically, it's a broad index for bonds. And at the bottom of this chart, you can see like red patches. So these are actually drawdowns of this bond index. So if you look at the right-hand side, that's current. So the current drawdown of this very broad bond index has been north of 12%. And the last time we had like such a worse drawdown was actually 2008. So we actually, the past few months, is actually bonds have witnessed a very, very significant market price decline, similar to what they've experienced in 2008. So hence, if you look at kind of across our portfolios, the lower risk portfolios actually suffer because of the allocation to bonds. However, I think given what we've like discussed about inflation, because interest rate markets actually move on expectations of growth and inflation, and the bond rally was actually driven by very high short-term inflation expectations, basically expecting CPI to go to 8.5%, however, for example. So if we actually see CPI numbers actually start to peak out and come off, I think we can see actually some kind of reversal of what has happened, and that would support bond prices. Starting from short term, but that would just kind of, gradually broaden out to longer term.
Oh, absolutely. Bonds. Well, thanks for explaining this and answering that question, Stephanie. Let's move on to the last topic we wanted to discuss. And I think earnings season has been kicking off, right? So big companies have announced earnings just earlier today, my time, actually. Tesla announced their earnings as well with record sales, right? And record revenue. What else have you been seeing? Is this a trend of great earnings this season between the U.S. And the European markets? Do you see any divergence there? And what's kind of your take on the next? Because I think Apple is reporting this week as well, right? And there's some other big ones coming.
Yeah,
so exactly. What's your take on all of that?
So I guess needless to say, the market is actually quite nervous because in the past few months, we were in a risk-off environment. And if you look kind of underneath the bigger index, a lot of like medium cap or small cap stocks, especially tech stocks, have fallen 40-50%. So I think that explains, for example, why when some of the big caps miss, I mean, they went down a lot. Like Netflix actually reported and they missed both the numbers as well as guidance. And I mean, stock was punished down like 30% plus. But if you kind of look at, I think if you look across different markets, the U.S. earnings season like so far is quite initial, but it's like kind of still quite strong, right? Record earnings, record margins. If you look across the continent, it's not the same case, right? European earnings have also been coming in, and it's been affected by not just the war in Ukraine, like rising costs, but also because a lot of European companies are export companies. I mean, they are affected by all these like supply chain constraints and, of course, a lot of like lockdowns happening in China as well. So, I mean, it's not as good as in the U.S. So, I mean, these are things, like, different things to watch out for, but European earnings are a bit concerning.
Yeah, thank you for that overview. And we'll keep monitoring this. And obviously, when we speak again in a couple of weeks' time, I think we got a lot of big other companies' earnings calls behind us. So we'll get a little bit more of a inside view also on how supply chains are looking for the rest of the year. So thank you so much for this, Stephanie, today. For anyone else, we have a couple events coming up for our Malaysia audience. So if you want to join us for those, there's a personal finance basic webinar. That's Wednesday, the 27th of April at 6 p.m. local time. And we have also an investment basics webinar Wednesday, the 4th of May, 6 p.m. as well. The links to sign up for those are in the show notes, as always, as well as on all of our social channels or where else you can find out about Stashaway. With that being said, I wish everyone a good rest of your week and speak to you soon again. Bye-bye.